Hello, and welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts gets excited when he hears the word scrappy because it reminds him of food. I am so ready for the NFL season, well, like the off season, the run up to the season, to really get going, but the NBA draft and Anthony Davis sort of stole our thunder. Well, if we're talking NBA, Clay Bennett stole my thunder, but that's another story. We are, however, biding our time like cobras ready to strike us NBA fans and analysts, and no one I know is more prepared at all times to talk football. He is coiled somewhere outside Bristol like a venomous python. The one and only Field Yates. Welcome back to the show, Field.
First of all, Mina, great to be back. Thank you for having me on. Second of all, that Clay Bennett stole my thunder line, that's like a 1,000 retweet minimum on Twitter. I guarantee you. Terrific.
No,
I think it plays well on a podcast, but that's the kind of joke that if I saw it on Twitter, I could not press retweet.
Stop.
I'd probably like it too. Like the double confirmation that one smashed.
Speaking of, no, actually, I'm not going to say what I was about to say, but you are getting married in 2 days, is it? 2 days?
So
that is
depending
insane.
On what time people are listening to this, I'm getting married on June 22nd. So it's possible that people are listening to this and I am already married. So if I go back and forth between referring to Chapin, my significant other, as my fiance or my wife, like, I think it's okay. Like, this is the one time where you can call your wife, I guess I call my soon-to-be wife, my wife, in advance of actually being married.
We're so close to your wedding. I feel like I was invited to the wedding. Like, I feel like we are recording. I'm going to pretend you're recording this, like, in your, do they call it a groom suite? It's the man where the men get ready.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, groom suite. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I feel like we're doing this in the groom suite to get you in the right mindset for your wedding. What is your hashtag for the wedding?
So, no, I am not necessarily always on board with hashtags for weddings, but being that my name is Field, it played really easy.
So many options.
My soon-to-be wife's name is Chapin. So Chapin takes the field, which is very, like, you know, it plays well, sports-related, it's witty, rolls off the tongue. Good website domain name too. So we thought that one was one of the first things that came to mind and one of the most obvious things we had to incorporate into the wedding.
I was going to suggest Fielder's Choice, but you know what? Yours is more feminist too. Like Chapin takes the field, you know, rather than Fielder's Choice. Yeah, I prefer yours.
I
think that's good.
She does wear the pants in the relationship. That is very clear. She is definitely the prevailing force. She's the one. She's the boss. So I think ours is the appropriate terminology.
Listeners to your podcast have heard a lot about Chapin and your wedding. That is, of course, the Fantasy Focus pod, which it probably gets heated up around July, right? Like, I mean, when do fantasy fans really start prepping for the season?
Yeah, so first of all, as you know, Mina, like, fantasy fans don't ever stop prepping, but there's like a cross-section of people that, you know, tune in and then tune out, from like the months of like mid to late July, and then they sort of say goodbye in January 1st. And they return, and it's like, you know, it's like a bird hibernating, right? Or like, I don't know, which way do birds fly back in the summer? Or maybe they fly south. What I'm trying to get to is that we have people that hang out with us for like 5 months, and then they say goodbye to us for 7 months. And so we're getting fired up for the people that are more seasonal fantasy players. But for those that are hardcore, like, I love getting a text in like May, and it's like, hey, like, you know, the Seahawks declined Jermaine Ifedi's fifth-year option. What does that mean for Russell Wilson's outlook this year? I'm like, you know something? In this case, it means nothing. Jermaine's going to have to earn his next contract a little bit more, but I appreciate the vested interest in fantasy.
You're correct there. Well, so, you know, we here at the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny also never sleep. We don't have an off season. So we are already getting ready for this season, and we've been doing division previews. We've been going division through division. Last week, Charles McDonald and I talked about the NFC South, which is an interesting division. You know, when I went back and listened to it, this isn't probably the most popular or conventional take, but I really feel like you could make a case for three teams making runs to win the division, or certainly for playoff spots, and that's every team but the Bucks, really. You and I however, are doing a different division. We are doing the AFC West, which as I was prepping, definitely feels like a two-team race still. Before we get into the team-by-team, do you agree with that?
I do think it's a two-team race as well. I would say this, though, and not to spoil the podcast, I think that there is a perception amongst the four teams in the AFC West that all of them have a chance to win immediately in this year, you know, in 2019. Mm-hmm. I think, though, that, you know, we have two legitimate stars at quarterback, one megastar, and I guess another star as well. And then we have two teams.
Drew Lock and Derek Carr, he's figuring it out, obviously.
Yes, right, exactly. I think, well, Nathan Peterman also was signed by the to the Raiders this offseason, so maybe three. But more seriously, you know, we have two teams that have a clear established path at quarterback, and then we have two others who are sort of floating this year, right? Like they have someone installed, but it may not be a long-term answer, and if it's not, then their season goes south probably rather quickly. But I'm really looking forward to the AFC West because you can make a case that even a team like the Raiders, we'll get into in more depth, like whether or not they're a legitimate contender to win the division this year, that's a team that is markedly better compared to where they were last year. Now, I understand that's somewhat damning with faint praise, but it's not like they're just a tiny bit better than where they were last year when they finished with, what, one of the five worst records in the NFL. But they are legitimately better this year on both sides of the ball.
I like the description, flirting, although if we're going that route, I feel like signing Flacco, which is what the Broncos did, feels more like negging, like they're kind of negging their fan base. But there's a lot of interesting things going on with that team. You know, as I went through, I like to kind of look through the depth charts, try to get caught up. And it's always interesting to me when you start kind of noticing strengths and weaknesses. I want to start with the Raiders, the soon-to-be star of Hard Knocks. Just because I think they're just a really wild team this year. But before we get to that, I want to take a quick break to tell you guys again about BetterHelp. Is there something that is interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, grief, and more. That's already a lot of things. You can connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it is so convenient. You can get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. If you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time with no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option, and my listeners can get 10% off your first month just by using the discount code Lenny. So when I get started today, go to betterhelp.com/Lenny. That's L-E-N-N-Y for those who don't know, although it's on the name of the podcast. You really could just check. I don't even know. What would they think? L-E-N-N-I-E? Is that, do people spell Lenny that way? Anyways, it's L-E-N-N-Y. Go to betterhelp.com/L-E-N-N-Y. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with the counselor you love. betterhelp.com/Lenny. Okay, Field. The Oakland, soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders. How do I begin? This team has a lot of really interesting, fascinating, weird, exciting pieces, but my enthusiasm is dampened by the fact that after looking at the depth chart, I pulled up the schedule and, oh boy, that beginning is not great. They start with, the division rivals, Denver, Kansas City, then they get the Colts and the Vikings and then the Bears. So this is a team that could start out in a pretty big hole, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I mean, a couple of things here. Every team has tough stretches during the season with their schedule. It's just the way it works. You've got 16 teams, and you've got to cram it all into 17 weeks. Everybody's going to have some less than desirable stretches. But John Gruden took to, I think, just his press conference to express his frustration with the schedule throughout the season for the Raiders here. You're right. I mean, it's nice to open up the season with two games at home. But look at some of the stretches that they have going forward. They play in week three at Minnesota, then at Indianapolis. Then they play against Chicago, but the game is a home game. However, it's played in London. So they go, after they play Kansas City on the September 15th, the next time they play a game in not even just Oakland, but the state of California, is November 3rd. So it's nearly two full months of being away from home playing games. And I understand this team is sort of the vagabond of the NFL right now, with it possibly moving to Vegas next year, and, you know, at times looking this offseason like they could have played in places like San Antonio. But they have a legitimate gripe with the schedule. It's very, very difficult. But you have to play the one that you have here, right? And I think of the Raiders this offseason, this is going to probably, people are going to take this the wrong way, so I'm going to try to explain it in enough depth. They remind me in some ways of last year's Cleveland Browns. Here's why. The obvious difference is they don't have Baker Mayfield or anything close to a young quarterback that was, and they made a major investment in. Derek Carr is now a veteran quarterback, and he's got some question marks despite the fact that he's played at a high level previously. But what the Browns did last offseason, 2018, was they basically collected every asset they could, and in some cases just threw caution to the wind as it pertained to price, right? I mean, someone like Jarvis Landry, he's like a $15, $16 million per year wide receiver. Love the guy a lot, but this is not a big play threat. He's a guy that has collected catches but never necessarily been as explosive as his new teammate, Odell Beckham Jr. T.J. Carey gets $8 million as a cornerback. There are a bunch of money thrown around to the Browns. The Raiders this offseason basically said the same thing. Anybody who is available, we're going to either sign them, trade for them, or draft them. Whether it's Trent Brown becoming the richest offensive lineman ever, whether it's Antonio Brown getting the richest wide receiver contract ever, whether it was other moves they made around the roster, the Raiders just said, we need to be better 1 to 53 next year. There is absolutely zero excuse not to be, even if it comes with some onerous contracts.
So I like where your head's at, and I think like that. I think that's why I was kind of disappointed when I looked at the schedule field, because I thought, this is a team that could be really interesting, but they're going to start 1-5, right, or whatever, 1-4, just by virtue of their schedule. I think perhaps a contrast with the Browns, and one of the reasons why I am concerned when I look at this depth chart, is while there are a lot of exciting pieces, there's just so much softness in the trenches, really on both sides of the ball, which. You mentioned the Brown signing. There's two Brown signings. You mentioned the Trent Brown signing. And this is an offensive line that, yes, people talk about how Derek Carr was really great just a couple of years ago, but this offensive line was one of the three best in the NFL a few years ago. And then not only did they take a precipitous downturn, they went out and hired Tom Cable, which I am not a fan of. Never been quiet about that. I don't think he's had success, especially over the last few years or so. Last year, they really struggled to protect Derek Carr. And I look at the line, and yes, they've got Colton Miller, who, had a lot of issues last season, allowed many sacks, tons of penalties. I think Brandon Parker, he's either gone or probably not in the rotation anymore. And they've got Brown on the outside. But on the interior, Gabe Husin, one of the better centers in the NFL. But then it's, Rodney Hudson. Gabe Jackson, the guard, also was from that very good offensive line, struggled a bit last year. And then they added Richie Incognito, which is just, bizarre for 20,000 different reasons.
That's a whole podcast in and of itself right there.
I know. We could do that. So while they've got so many exciting skill players, arguably one of the better wide receiver corps in the NFL, Josh Jacobs, who I adored, I've spent a whole podcast with Dan Orlovsky talking about Derek Carr and why I think he was actually better near the end of last season than people give him credit for. I do worry about this line.
It's a legitimate worry. And Mina, we talk about the players, but I'm as concerned about the coach as anything else. And you're a Seahawks fan. Everybody knows that. Tom Cable previously served as the Seahawks offensive line coach. And there's just a thread that if you follow it, where he has been, teams have, generally speaking, underperformed before or when he was there and then exceeded expectations when he was gone. And this is not personal. It's just a fact, right? I mean, the Seahawks offensive line was the bane of the franchise's existence. And a lot of the same guys are still there now and all of a sudden looking much more competent under Mike Solari. Mm-hmm. These guys that you were talking about, whether it's Gabe Jackson, whether it's Rodney Hudson was a star last year, he's just a rock. But other than Rodney Hudson, basically every offensive lineman last year was somewhat of a turnstile for Oakland. And I'm not trying to make this all about Tom Cable, but I just don't know that schematically and fundamentally they're going to be a top-tier team, regardless of the talent in place. Now they've got two question marks to tackle. Colton Miller, who you referenced, there was some smoke that he would move from the left side to the right side. He's going to stay on the left side of the offensive line. He's put on some 30-plus pounds. He's legitimately an NBA player. He's 6'9". He's huge. Trent Brown was traded away for a bag of peanuts in the seventh-round pick last year from the 49ers to the Patriots. Obviously, he had a really solid year, and the Super Bowl tends to add a couple million dollars to your value no matter what when you're a free agent. But to make him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history, it comes with some risk here, Mina. And it's just that this is a player who was traded because of inconsistent play and being huge. I mean, he's legitimately massive, Mina. And again, that's a good thing for the offensive line. But you just want to make sure that this is a player who's at the peak condition, because when you're playing the right side of the offensive line in the AFC West, that means two matchups a year with Von Miller and two more a year with Joey Bosa or Melvin Ingram, maybe even in some plays, both of them coming off of the same side. So it's a massive task for that offensive line. So talent, I think, is definitely better, but I think your concerns are legitimate.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the ball, obviously the defensive line, the absence of the pass rush was a running joke in the NFL last year. The Raiders finishing, after trading Mack, finishing with less sacks than almost every team, I think.
The lowest.
I meant to say
more than Khalil Mack by himself. That's it.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. They finished with a lot of elite players. 13 yeah. sacks. Jesus Christ. It is rough. And, they added Cleveland Farrell with the 4 pick, which shocked a lot of people. Shocked you and me as we reacted to the draft in real time.
Yep.
But outside of that, not a lot of upgrades in that front seven. I think they're counting on, Maurice Hurst, who was good last season and was actually a great draft pick given where they picked him up due to his health concerns. And Arden Key, I think they're hoping to use a little more situationally, right? And I know you've watched him play a lot out of Boston. But they didn't really add anyone else. Just a couple of kind of lower tier free agents. So I don't see them making massive, unless Farrell is like much better than expected. And I do think he's quite pro ready. I just don't see them making a ton of strides on that side of the ball.
So let me ask you this, Mina, and I'm not asking this rhetorically. I'm truly wondering, if you told me, if I gave you the question, which player on the Raiders defense is a true, unquestioned, no doubt about it, blue chip player that you could build your defense around for the next 8 years? Is there anybody that immediately comes to mind as yes? I don't think twice about it. This is a guy that you expect, not you think could become, but you expect will have multiple Pro Bowl nominations, maybe an All-Pro season in him, a foundational player. Because it's possible that some of these guys could develop, whether it's a Cleveland Farrell, whether it's a Jonathan Abrams, or other first-round pick on the defensive side of the ball. But as of this recording right now, there's not a single player that I say to myself, all right, I know for a fact these are guys who are going to be long-term blue-chip prospects that you have zero doubts about.
There's no one. There's a lot of guys that make or break years. Like the earlier draft picks, right? Carl Joseph, Gerrion Conley, who actually finished kind of strong, but has struggled. And I don't think neither of those players have really lived up to what, by the way, Carl Joseph, that I don't know how they plan on deploying him. Cause Abram, I thought his skills were kind of duplicative.
That
I said duplicative.
You're the Yale
like
grad
duplicitous.
Here. Yeah.
Really not living up to that at the moment. But kind of hard hitting. When they took on Carl, they sort of just compared him to Cam Chancellor, even though he's 6 inches shorter than Cam. But they sort of have the same skill set. So I thought that was a little bit redundant. But in any case, there's a lot of guys in make or break years. There's a lot of maybes, but you're absolutely right. There's no proven stars, and I think they're going to really. I do think this offense is going to be better than people expect, purely because of the influx of skill players. I think Carr could continue to grow in Gruden's offense, but I just think this defense is too bad for them to contend.
Yeah, and I think before, do the Raiders fan? Does the fan base? I guess the collective black hole, I was trying to think of is there a name, the Beehive for Beyonce, the Raiders followers all congregate around a single nickname too. Before whatever, Raiders, backers, belongers, black hole nation, jumps down our throat. The point is that right now we don't know if there are stars. It's possible. When you draft a guy fourth overall, Cleveland Farrell,
yes,
I think the expectation should be that he's going to become a star, right? It's just that as of this recording, we have some question marks on the defensive side of the ball. And oh, by the way, you've got the most prolific passer in the NFL last season, the reigning MVP, and then a player in Phillip Rivers who's thrown for 40,000 yards in his career with an excellent wide receiver group again this year. You're going to have, if you can't play defense in this division, you're simply not going to contend.
Raider Nation. That's
Raider Nation. My apologies.
I mean, they exist in the black. They're the silver and black. They exist in the black hole. Although when you can't really exist in a black hole, right? So, don't
right.
you go?
Yeah,
that's a wormhole where you end up somewhere. Yeah.
I just shortchanged Philip Rivers by 15,000 passing yards. My bad, Philip.
Well, speaking of Philip, let's move on to one of the two teams that we view as contenders. A team that, by the way, I think is going to win the division. So I'll just say that. I don't know if you're with KC or LAC, and I say LAC to remind myself to say LAC, because otherwise I will not say LAC. But as I was going depth chart by depth chart, I found myself, and I didn't look at the schedules, but I believe the Chargers are a better team than Kansas City. I think they're unquestionably a more complete team with far fewer question marks. Agree or disagree?
It's a legitimate conversation. And so a couple things here is, you're right. Like, what is the major weakness on this Chargers roster? Like, what's your major question mark going into this season? I have just a couple. One would be, you know, Russell Okung all of a sudden has a very suspicious, undisclosed injury.
I saw that.
He's starting left tackle there. Yeah. And
concerning, because that line is for me the biggest question mark.
Right. Yeah. And it's June, Mina. So it's possible that, like, hey, the lack of information is not because there's something like really gravely serious. It's just that, like, they have no obligation to us to actually disclose what it is. So they're just saying, you know, less is more when it comes to public information on injuries. That's one. And then, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know that they had star defensive tackle play last year, but a guy like Darius Filon, who departs in free agency, is presumptively replaced by Jerry Tillery.
Yeah.
Remember, Tillery, their first-round pick, is coming off of a shoulder surgery. So did they fortify the middle of the defense enough with a guy like Jerry Tillery, Brandon Mebane, who, and again, Seahawks fan, you know, like, the guy is one of the sturdiest, most respected players in the NFL. This is the tail end of his career. And in the middle linebacker play, you know, they did a extension with Denzel Perriman for a couple of years, and they signed Thomas Davis. So is the middle of the defense good enough? But I trust the infrastructure. I'm not sure if this is like a fun fact or what it is, but Tom Telesco, their GM, has now had, what, 7 drafts to his name, 2013 through 2019. In the first 6, obviously the guys in the 2019 class haven't played a game. The first 6, he's yielded at least 1 All-Pro or Pro Bowl player in each class. So quietly, he's built, to your point, one of the most balanced rosters in the NFL. And, you know, they last year, I mean, they tied with the Chiefs in terms of record. They were 1 game back of the Chiefs in terms of record. So it's not that far of a stretch to say that they are as balanced or even a better roster, because defensively, I think we know they have the clear edge.
You know, that's the crazy facts about Telesco, and he really doesn't get enough credit, I think, for what
I agree.
He's been doing,
I agree.
Out there.
East Coast bias.
classic. Let's talk about the defense for a little bit, because, man, they are a good defense. So when you go back in, the secondary is absurd, right? I mean, so just, we know the corners. It's Casey Hayward. I guess Trevor Williams will probably start opposite him. They've got Desmond King there in the mix as well. Derwin, we know, one of the best draft picks in recent memory. They drafted Nasir Adderley as a free safety, who I really like. And that was an area of need for them, especially, you know, Jaleel Adde really, really struggled last year, and they were often compensating for his play. So the secondary is insane. And they've got Adrian Phillips, who can kind of play closer to the line as well. The problem, and anyone who watched them in the playoffs know, is that they basically ran out of linebackers. You know, we roasted them a lot for playing, you know, 300 defensive backs against the Patriots and the Ravens, but it was out of necessity. Okay, now granted, I don't think they should have done that versus New England, or they should have somehow made some sort of adjustment, but that was born of injury. You mentioned Perryman. He got knocked out for the season. He'll be coming back. And then some of the additions they made there. So I'm not terribly concerned about anything on this defense. You know, they do need, I think they'll probably want Adderley and Tillery to contribute from the beginning, given that they're both filling areas of need, as you described. So that would be like the only real question mark for me. Otherwise, I'm pretty confident about this defense. It's really the offensive line. Yeah, just staying healthy. Having those two rookies contribute, they're fine. But the offensive line is a problem field. Like, when I go through the depth charts, you mentioned Okung getting hurt, and that's especially concerning because, like, they're not deep, okay? So you imagine, and they kind of ran, they just ran it back, by the way, since they spent those draft picks on defense. I know they took a tackle later, Trey Pipkins. A delightfully named Trey Pipkins. Yep. But otherwise, they're pretty much running it back. And, you know, this is, I feel comfortable saying they're probably the most dubious offensive line in the division.
Yeah, that's interesting. I put Denver in the conversation too. And then, you know, I feel like it would be a little bit of speaking out of both sides of my mouth if we didn't mention the concerns we just had with that Raiders offensive line again. But yeah, so but, you know, offensive line play.
I can just throw out superlatives and negatives. Don't worry about the stuff I say earlier or after, please.
There's like three good offensive lines in the NFL. Seriously, there's like, you know, there's seriously like three that you don't worry about. So we kind of have concerns. We can talk ourselves into things. We can quickly talk ourselves out of things too. But yeah, so. For the Chargers, I would say that beyond the roster spots here, Mina, and this is somewhat unfair, but it's a real thing in sports, is that until you kind of like get over a hump, we have a harder time buying into it, right? Like, and I understand that they made a transformative trade, but like until the Raptors proved they could win big games in the playoffs, like no one took them as seriously, right? Now I understand you land Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James to parts of the East, and the path changes, but like. This was a, you know, the current NBA champions were like the longtime NBA choke artist in the playoffs. So for the Chargers, absent them getting it done, like they could be perhaps the best roster that Tom Telesco's constructed during his tenure there in LA and dating back to San Diego as well. But when they get into the playoffs come January, people are going to bring up the fact that, like, they have to do it when it matters. Like, Phillip Rivers will be forever compared to Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger, and I think objectively his career could be almost as good as theirs. Like, there's a case for him as the most talented of the three, but his Hall of Fame credentials might be clearly third because of the lack of postseason success. I think it's going to come for this team, but I think until it does, people are going to wonder how legit is LA as a contender in the NFL.
I got to just get my feelings heard on this. Phil Rivers is so much better than Eli Manning. So much better, and I will be so personally, deeply, painfully upset if Eli gets into the Hall and he doesn't just because of those Super Bowls. But any statistic, it's very easy to make. But I do have a concern about Rivers, and let's you know kind of wrap the Chargers on this. I am Rivers Hive. Everyone knows that, but he did fall off a little bit at the end of last season. I was just pulling up his splits. You know, and his statistics were great last year, and he was even like in the MVP conversation, to be honest. But in December and then in the playoffs, you know, stick with December. I'm just looking at it. His passer rating fell by about 30 points. You know, then a lot of that had to do with his protection. And that's, you know, why I'm concerned. Like they did a lot of what they did despite it at times. I think they have one of the better running back groups in the league as well, between Gordon and Eckler, both of whom are just stupendous at breaking tackles, and Gordon really bounced back in the red zone as well, pertinent to your fantasy interests. But again, if this offensive line falls apart and they don't figure out what they're doing on the right side, for example, and Okunga's actually hurt and Lamp doesn't make the transition, Forrest Lamp I'm speaking of, this is going to be a problem for them to the end. And that's, I guess, the only thing that would hold me back from going, even though I do think they're going to get win the division and we'll get to the Chiefs. We'll talk about the Chiefs at the end, arguably one of those actual few good offensive lines you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's just something that worries me, Field. So I don't know. I still think they're going to win the division. I think they're going to obviously go deep into the playoffs, but that is a concern for me.
Yeah, sometimes what happens when these conversations arise where like the premise is like, what are the concerns for a team, is we start to amplify concerns that we really like, are somewhat, you know, insignificant, right? I'm not saying that the Chargers don't have legit concerns, but it's like my confidence in this franchise and in this roster is really high going into this season. I don't think that the floor for them is like 7 wins. Like, I think the combustion rate is fairly low for the Chargers. That being said, there are a couple of spots that prevent them from going from like, whether it's good to great or great to spectacular. So those, like you said, offensive line, to me, the interior of the defense, those are just a couple of spots to keep an eye on going into the season.
Speaking of keeping an eye on things, I've been watching my iTunes reviews, looking for questions, and we've got a few, so hit it, Mike.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Now it is time for the mailbag, which is brought to you by Tissot. Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Shop at us.tissotshop.com. Got a great question straight out the gate from KWC328, who asks me about movies, as I don't talk about movies enough. This is an NFL podcast, but he did ask if I've seen Paddington and Paddington 2. So I have not seen Paddington, but I watched Paddington 2 on a plane, and I cried like a baby. And I just want to get this take out. Hugh Grant was robbed of an Oscar nomination. Have you seen Paddington 2, Field?
Yeah, I have not. I haven't seen either one of them, and it's pretty amazing that you can see a movie in reverse order and appreciate it as much as you did.
Yes, that speaks to the quality of the franchise. Kids' movies these days are all really good, by the way. They're much better than we were kids. Archon4545 asks another movie question. What is the one movie snack you can't go without? Field, when I was young, I loved Raisinets, which is weird because that feels like an old person thing. But,
yep, sure.
Now I like
that's
Twizzlers.
That's a little old of you, Mina. That's a little old of you.
It is a little. At least it's not like Werther's Originals. What is your movie snack?
Younger Field would choose Milk Duds until, like, my parents made it clear that, like, pretty much every time I went to the movies and had an entire box of Milk Duds, it followed up with a trip to the dentist. In a low moment, or not a low moment, but in a hedonistic moment, I'll go back to the Milk Duds. Otherwise, I roll with, like, you know, the incredibly savory and probably very healthy popcorn. Can't go wrong.
Yes.
It's so versatile.
Popcorn is healthier than other. I mean, I guess if you get a ton of butter, it's not
all that butter, right?
A little lower cal. I'd love to see a picture of young Field. In my mind, actually, I don't want to see one because in my mind, you're aging backwards like Benjamin Button. That's what I choose.
I am. Yeah, that's me.
John Connerson. Okay, this is a football question. A mushroom. I too had him. I had a bowl cut as well. We should compare bowl cuts. Thanks, Mom. John Connerson asks, if the NFL decided to expand playoffs to home and home or best of three instead of one game, how differently would recent playoff games have gone? Would my Falcons have won the Super Bowl with a second or third chance against New England? Ooh. Well, you know what? Let's talk about the Falcons and the Rams, right? Because let's start with the Falcons. If the Falcons play a game two, who do you think wins two out of three? Falcons, New England.
Falcons, New England that season. Man, I remember going into that game. I mean, the lines just as much that it was virtually a toss up. Man, I feel like, Mina, that I almost would be like, yeah, the Patriots would win 1.6 and the Falcons would win 1.4 or vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that it was a clear 2-1. I think in the NFL, like, we have some prominent examples where, like, if the series was actually conducted, it would tilt in the other team's favor. But we've had so many, generally speaking, the NFL has weeded out to the point that, like, the best two teams are often there. I don't know. Do you have a strong? I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I don't have a strong opinion on how that one would go.
It's tough because it always feels like in recent Patriots Super Bowls that they're winning by the skin of their teeth, right? But I also think that's what they do. Like, I think that's kind
but
of built.
They were a wagon that year, Mina. They went 14-2. This was the year that Tom Brady was suspended, so they lost one game when Brady was out. And the only other game they lost was that Sunday night game against the Seahawks. And, you know, the Seahawks, that was an excellent year for them as well. I don't view that Patriots team as one that, like, just got lucky in the Super Bowl. Like, they were legitimately stacked. That was the year, like, Garrett Blunt had 18 rushing touchdowns, Pete Gronk. Like, they were really, really good that season. So I don't view them, I don't view their victory, so to speak, as lucky.
You're convincing me. Also, just thinking about this year, like, this Patriots offense was worse. And I also think Sean McVay would benefit from having another bite at the apple.
So I think
I think the Rams would have a better shot of winning 2 of 3.
Yep. I could totally see, like, I don't spend as much time peering backwards in the NFL, but it's a fair question. I just don't know that anybody, like, the last there's probably an example of like a really imbalanced. I mean, I guess the last major upset in the Super Bowl was probably the Patriots losing to the Giants, right, in 2012 or 2007. Yeah. Like, I think the Patriots played that series against the Giants in 2007. They went 2 out of 3, but they didn't. They played it once and they lost. So history has changed mm-hmm. because of that. But the funny part, I like dealing with the hypothetical. The funny part is that the NFL would never entertain such thoughts.
Geist VF asks, do you think Arians can keep Jameis from throwing 40 picks? No, I don't. You know, we've talked about Jameis a lot, so I won't get into it too much. But I did think what was interesting was Fieldy, in some of his comments, Arians talked about Jameis's footwork in being what he thought was actually leading to some of his poor decision making. So, and kind of suggested that there might be some changes there. I also suggested optimistically, I pointed to the trajectory of Ben Roethlisberger, who threw even more picks than Jameis, at the beginning and obviously played under Arians. So there's reasons for optimism, but I think my general feeling is that I've seen enough of Jameis where I don't imagine there'll be significant changes.
Honestly, Mina, it's one of the stories of the season for me. It really is, because him and Marcus Mariota in tandem, and that's not because they played so similarly, but because, of course, they were drafted back-to-back, and because neither one of them has seemingly had any substantive talks about an extension going into the final year of their contract. That never happens in the NFL for quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are almost always extended at least a year out, and it's make or break for them this year, and Bruce Arians did not take this job with the expectation that his team would need 3 to 5 years to rebuild. He took the job because he wanted to win big right away. He's confident. We'll see whether it actually happens in September.
Last question, and this one I think I can handle pretty quickly, is from DMO in Portland, who asks about the impact that Travis Frederick coming back will have on the Dallas offensive line. A field, I imagine we're on the same page about this.
It's a game changer. Yeah, it's huge. Joe Looney was really good last year for them stepping in, but that's just because that is more of a reflection of solid play than it is an indictment of Frederick. Frederick is arguably the best center in football.
Before we get to Denver and Kansas City, wanted to quickly tell you about Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. The Tissot Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. While the Tissot PR100 family of watches brings together sporty and feminine details for a collection that is bold, romantic, and ideal for the modern women. Watches look really, I feel like right now I've noticed a lot of girls wearing watches. I don't know anything about what's in style, but I've noticed girls who are cooler than me and have cool style wearing them. So I assume that that's
pretty stylish.
Does Chapin wear a watch?
She does wear a watch, but I think they're very much in vogue.
Shop Tissot at us.tissotshop.com and at select watch and jewelry stores nationwide. Speaking of people who are on the clock, let's talk about the Broncos quarterbacks first. Flacco, he is on the clock insofar as they can get rid of him pretty easily. You know, this is kind of an experiment of sorts. In case you couldn't tell from what I said earlier about the Broncos nagging their fans, it's not an experience that I was particularly excited about. But it isn't. It's going to be interesting, Field, because I think I'm curious to see what the Broncos' new offense looks like under Rich Scangarello, who was Kyle Shanahan's guy, the quarterback's coach in San Francisco, and had a lot of success with Mullins there, right? And previously. Well, he's never called plays in the NFL, so you'd have to look kind of to his college tape at Wagner College in Staten Island.
Right. Let's go.
But my sense is that we're going to just kind of see a lot of what Shanahan does. You know, it's going to be a sort of similar offense, heavier sets, a lot of tight ends, more running backs, a lot of play actions, some misdirections, boots. So I guess my question to you is, how do you see Joe Flacco fitting in that offense?
Well, there's a lot of confidence in Denver, whether it's well-placed or not, that this was a move that clearly upgraded their quarterback play this offseason. Mina, I tend to think when it comes to quarterbacks, when you're talking yourself into the player, this is sort of a poor threshold to live by. But to me, that's kind of the one that I often gravitate towards. Like, if you kind of close your eyes and squint, you can imagine Joe Flacco being productive in an offense. I don't want to do that. It's the most important position in the sports, right? Like, it is probably going to be an offense that works to tailor to some of Joe Flacco's skills. But then again, you know, like, I don't think that teams, you know, enter a season and say, you know something, Joe does X, Y, and Z well, but we're so headstrong that we're going to focus on A, B, and C instead. You know, like, Joe Flacco was a middling quarterback at best last year. He is many years past the best football in his career. And thought fairly or unfairly, the guy's has made so much money, it's incredible. But, like, most of his success will forever be linked to a single postseason. And that's just a fact about Joe Flacco. That's fine. He has some enviable traits in moments. But the NFL and quarterback play specifically is about a guy that does it every single Sunday. And I understand the motivation to try to make a move. I just, you know something? I just don't know that this is really that much of an upgrade.
I don't think it is. I am curious to see how long they stick with him, because obviously they drafted Drew Lock, who I did not think was ready to start in the league. I mean, you know, my timeline for that is always way behind most teams. And some of these guys they take in the first round. But I'm not sure how much of an upgrade he is over Flacco at this point. Probably not. And I think they probably added just enough around Flacco to keep things mediocre, which is probably great to hear for Broncos fans. It's already a very strong run game with Philip Lindsay, who's the breakout undrafted star. Or was he seventh or undrafted? Undrafted, right?
Undrafted.
Interesting. You know, I was kind of breaking down his stats, trying to get a sense of whether it would be repeatable. And he finished. The one thing that there were a few numbers that caught my eye. One was that he finished first in yards before contact per run, which speaks well. You know, speaks to the offensive line really in their run blocking, even though they struggled with pass pro a bit last year. Sixth in DVOA and 22nd in success rate. So usually when there's a discrepancy between DVOA and success rate, and success rate sort of measures, and that's a Football Outsider stat, measures consistency. It means that the running back has broken off a few really long explosive runs and maybe gotten stuffed a bit more on short yardage runs. But 22nd is not terrible. You know, it's still pretty good. And I think we saw enough out of him to be confident. Wide receiver core is not great. It's pretty weak, I think. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders is still their ostensible number one. He got hurt last year, tore his Achilles, so we'll see him coming back. Cortland Sutton was impressive, but the real big shining new addition is one of Joe Flacco's beloved tight ends, and that's Noah Fant. I think that he could very quickly become the centerpiece of this offense.
I love the player. Love him. Coming out of Iowa, the traits are there, Mina. And I understand he played second fiddle to TJ Hockenson last season. The 2017 season is special for Noah Fant. There are some limitations in the game right now. But again, I think sometimes two things happen in the NFL, by the way. I think oftentimes in the draft, the tight end spot is rarely regarded by the team as the most important and pressing need, which can explain why guys like O.J. Howard and then more recently Fant have slipped a bit in the draft relative to where we thought their stock was if you were to just stack the prospects 1 to 100. And is he a complete blocker right now? No. But it's really hard. I mean, it's impossible to build from scratch some of the things that he already has. You can't necessarily teach them, to borrow a cliche. Noah Fant is dynamic. He is massive. He's got soft hands. There is a lot that he can do that very few tight ends in the NFL will be able to do right away. I'm really excited for that. I hope that he is the focal point of the passing game. Now, there's a very short list of tight ends that have entered the NFL as rookies and become that for their offense. So I'm probably chasing a ghost right away, but I would love to see Fant be an integral part of the passing game right away.
I think two of the biggest additions weren't actually players field, but coaches, right? I mean, Munchak, offensive line, huge, obviously, after one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL. And for him to come and over and really, you know, he was being considered as a head coach candidate, and to grab him for that position group is tremendous. And then on the other side of the ball, they've got Vic Fangio. So that, I guess, just to wrap the Broncos there, I think that I loved that hire. It'll be interesting to me, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this, to see how these pieces fit into what he does. You know, they already ran a 3-4, but just because you already ran a 3-4 doesn't mean it's the same kind of 3-4 necessarily, yep. Especially in today's NFL. Fangio's defenses use a lot more zone, a lot more pattern matching than what the Broncos have done in the past. I'm not quite sure they've got the linebackers to execute, but they did make a lot of improvements to the secondary, even though previously the no-fly zone has very much so become the high air traffic zone in recent years. You know, cornerbacks have left, safeties have left, they've taken step backs. But then they went out and they added Bryce Callahan from Fangio's Bears to man the slot. I'm guessing that'll move Chris Harris, who just got paid outside. They added Kareem Jackson. So I think there's some transitional concerns, but I'm optimistic about this defense.
Yeah, me too. And I think one thing that just sort of obvious but needs to be reiterated at basically every stop is that two pass rushers make the rest of the defense look amazing in a lot of cases, right? And that's not to say that there aren't talented players, but sometimes it's just like when a quarterback has no time whatsoever to operate, and that's usually the case because of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, right away became a force last year. Like, I just think that you can cover up so many warts defensively. So they've got really, really good pass rushers. They have, I would say, beyond Chris Harris, solid cornerback play. Not literally a trade, but kind of had a swap. Kareem Jackson goes from Houston to Denver, and Bradley Roby goes from Denver to Houston. I think Denver got the better end of that deal. They've got enough versatility in the back end and obviously star power up front that I really believe that this team could be special defensively. Is a little bit too strong, but certainly outstanding.
Yeah, I kind of returning to the identity team. All right, well, let's wrap it up by talking about a team and the defense that I'm still very concerned about, which is why, not the only reason why, I've got them actually behind the Chargers, despite the fact that they have the most exciting quarterback in the NFL. But boy, this Chiefs defense field, I just still don't feel great about it at all, especially after kind of going position by position. You know, they did trade. Well, let's start from let's go front to back, even though the secondary, I don't know, man. But they did. So they parted ways with Justin Houston and Dee Ford, traded big time for Frank Clark, added Emmanuel Ogbah, Alex Okafor. Should be better, but I am not enthusiastic about the linebacker group. You know, Anthony Hitchens took a real step back last year. They got, I guess, Darren Lee for like nothing. Reggie Ragland. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. How are you feeling about this? The current state of the Chiefs front seven?
You know, just use the reference to the Broncos about how like two pass rushers can really change the makeup of a defense and make them look much, much, much better. So I will give the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt in that regard, in that like they've got a bunch more pieces in place now that can make some of these players that have been sort of average or slightly above average or slightly below average that could be a lot better, right? Frank Clark and Emmanuel Ogbah and Alex Okafor could make life a lot easier on these linebackers. I think the trade for Frank Clark is going to be much discussed. I think there are some people that feel like the Chiefs, you know, made a clear and massive upgrade over Dee Ford. I think there are other people that feel like it was a lot to pay, given that you had to trade a first-round pick and then also pay Frank Clark. I think the defense is clearly better, Mina, and which, you know, there's nowhere
low,
to go.
Low bar.
Yes, very low bar to clear. Schematically, you know, obviously a massive shift with Steve Spagnuolo as the defensive coordinator now. I know that our job as analysts is to, like, you know, part of what people crave is the forward thinking here. I think the Chiefs have taken a step forward. I think they are counting on a lot, like, you know, a few key additions to mask some areas of vulnerability still. I just have, like you, I have my question marks because it's a good pass rushing trio now. None of the players are as good as Von Miller, and maybe none of them are as good as Bradley Chubb, for example. Like, it's possible that Frank Clark is the fifth best rusher in this division. It's crazy as that sounds, right?
Yeah.
Between two Chargers
edge
rushers
and
two Broncos edge rushers. Yeah, he's really good. I mean, you know him better than most.
But it's a stacked division. You're right.
It is. It's an excellent division. It's the quarterbacks that I think is really going to, you know, that's the area that I have my gravest concerns over, right?
The whole secondary, dude. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu's is right now like being perceived as the savior of the secondary, and I like Tyrann Mathieu. I think he's a great player. I do not think he's elite. And we know how bad this pass defense was. You know, they were helped a little bit by the fact that the Chiefs had such a great pass rush. And the pass rush was helped by a little bit that the Chiefs were scoring so freaking much that teams were always in passing situations, whereas the run defense was god-awful last year. And I don't anticipate being significantly better, again, given the state of that linebacking group. But outside of Mathieu, it is not great. So we'll see. And Spags is aggressive with his pressures. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, Kendall Fuller, Breland, I guess Javarius Ward is the other cornerback. Maybe they all step up, but...
Yeah, I think it's one of those, you know, I think there's a chance that, like, perception changes quite a bit about players, about some of these players from one year to the next, right? I mean, like, sometimes we lean too heavily on, like, just the most recent champions. But, like, if you told me, like, if I told you, like, oh, like, the Patriots, like, a year ago, if I said, like, yeah, they have Kyle Van Noy as one of their principal defensive players, you'd be like, okay. Now, you're like, dude, Kyle Van Noy is a stud, right? Like, that guy's really freaking good.
Yes.
So it's possible that a lot of Kansas City's fortunes will change and these players will look a lot different a year from now. But in the same way that I had to kind of see it from the Chargers on the biggest stage to sort of make me believe that this team is ready to take that next step, for the Chiefs, once I see this defense in, you know, in more competitive situations or, you know, competitive situations, period, then I'll believe and buy into some of the shifts a bit more. But this team is, I mean, they're really, really good, really good.
Well, in Spags ain't Belichick, right? So as far as turning Kyle Van Noy into the best pass rusher in the NFL. Yeah, they're again, great line, run game. I mean, well, just wrapping up, I don't even want to talk about Mahomes. I don't really have any concerns about...
What can we add to the conversation? He's awesome. He's amazing.
But he lost some weapons, you know. It is, I think the line's still fine, but, you know, they did pay Damian Williams, who really broke out at the end. And we'll see. We only got a small sample size from him, but we don't know what the situation was Tyreek Hill. You know, I talked about him on this podcast, the off the field stuff and what that means. But again, I can't imagine he's not going to get any sort of suspension. So at this point, your number one receiver is Sammy Watkins, and after that, it is dubious. Kelce also, you know, he did have surgery in the offseason. I think they're saying he should be fine, but it's not as good a situation as last year for Mahomes, and I'll just wrap it up there.
Yeah, I'll just say this about the offense is that, you know, I hate to rely on cliches too frequently, Mina, but one thing that we often hear, a common refrain for quarterbacks, is the best raise the level of play of those around them, right? There was a time last year where Drew Brees was taking wide receivers seemingly off the street and turning them into pretty good options. Now things slowed down at the end of the season, and New Orleans obviously had a sort of a dip in the last quarter. But the Patrick Mahomes can make players look better, and that's that may be incumbent upon him this year if Tyreek Hill misses time to begin the season. I love this team. I think the talent is excellent. I love Andy Reid as a coach. I think the front office has done a really nice job of being resourceful and adding some key pieces. It's just sort of wait and see, right? I mean, it's a team that, you know, has Andy Reid never won a Super Bowl. The Chiefs haven't won a Super Bowl in whatever it is, 52 years or 50 years. So it's, some of it is just, again, we are somewhat like sometimes it's hard for us to just buy into something until we've actually seen it with our own eyes. And that's kind of where it is in Kansas City. To break through the ceiling, they just have to do it.
They have one of the three best quarterbacks in the NFL, in my opinion. Honestly, if I'm winning one game, I might go with Mahomes. That covers up a lot. So, anyways. All right. So before we get to our final segment, I just wanted to quickly remind you guys about ZipRecruiter. Look, finding a new job is a lot of work. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Also to tell you to go find a job if that's what you want. Now ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you will like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone like you. If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know, so if you're interested in the job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. And based on a third-party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job on ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. Those were the results of a 2017 U.S. survey of over 500 ZipRecruiter users who got hired for a job they found on ZipRecruiter. My listeners should download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Do not wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner I can help you find a better job. And now, our final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dinks and Dunks are brought to you by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Field, are you ready? 4 questions from me, 1 from Lenny.
I am so ready.
Okay, question number 1. Josh McCown, self-described journeyman quarterback, just retired. He will be joining us, I believe, at ESPN for some studio shows. So my question for you is, not including Josh McCown, who has the best hair at ESPN, man division? Because his hair is something to behold.
He has fantastic hair. It really is electric. Teddy Bruschi, that was the answer.
Oh, so full. So luscious.
Yeah,
gleaming.
It's really nice.
His hair like a Disney prince.
Yeah, it is terrific. Teddy, he's got a, and the smile to match. Teddy's the best.
So winning. Question 2. Are you watching Big Little Lies? I feel like we've talked about this.
Yes, I am. Full disclosure, I have not seen Sunday night's episode yet. As we mentioned, we're here. This is my wedding week, so we've been a bit distracted. But I'm one episode behind.
But you found time to do my show, and that's why I love you. We talked about it because I'm doing this Big Little Lies Twitter show with The Ringer, which you guys can check out on Twitter. My question for you is, which Big Little Lies character are you, Field Yates?
What's funny is, like, if you're thinking of them, do you want me to pick specifically a male character on the show?
No, female character, one of the 5. One of them, which of the Monterey 5 is Field Yates?
I was going to say, because, like, if you want me to pick, like, any of the male characters, like, there's not an extensive list of, like, you know, like, men that you, like, you know, aspire to be.
They're lame, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's a good question. Wow, I'm trying to think, like, how I would... gosh, do I really want to be any of the, like, you know, I'm a big...
You can pick 2.
Do I want to be Reese? Like, I don't know that I want to be Reese. Her character, I feel like she's just a little bit more petty, like, in a relative to some of, like, the dark stuff that happens on the show. I find Zoe Kravitz, Bonnie, in the show to be, like, she's got sort of a more mild and, like, you know, endearing disposition. I don't know, though. I don't know that I have an obvious answer. That's poor form by me.
I'll answer for you. I'll answer for you.
Okay. Yeah.
I could see you as kind of actually a Madeline Bonnie hybrid because you got that Madeline preppiness about you.
Yeah.
And, like, you're very prepared. Yeah. But then you are also, like, pretty temperate and easy to be around, like Bonnie.
Well, that kind of works, though. Madeline Bonnie, the hybrid. Yeah. That works.
Which playoff team from last year do you think is going to regress the most?
I'm reminding myself. I know one of my picks going into the season, when this question was not posted in this exact same form, but a comparable form was brought to me. I want to say the Ravens are a team that kind of comes to mind as one, and the Texans too. Just a weird vibe right now going around Houston.
That offseason,
as of this recording, they do not have a general manager. So keeping an eye on that one.
Yeah. Did not like the Texans offseason. Yeah. And I have questions about the Bears too, but we'll get to that when I get to the North podcast. What are the 3 best types of nuts?
I'm going to go with number 1 would be cashews. Number 2 would be almonds, because you can mix them up in so many different, like, you know, so many blends. You can throw, they can be sweet, they can be savory. They're almost like sunflower seeds. So many different flavors there. Number 3 would be, probably, you know, a good roasted chestnut. How about that? Very seasonal.
Quality answer. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. You can get those, like, on the street in Korea as, like, a snack. Everywhere.
Oh, I've never been to Korea before, but that gives me all the motivation I need.
All right. Well, speaking of trips, I'm looking at this question Lenny sent in. It's his final question. I'm going to, as always, read it in his voice. Field, congrats on the big day. Guess my invitation was lost in the mail. Question, how many shirtless pics are you going to post from your honeymoon? I know you love those. Lenny.
I'm going to have to ask Lenny for what is Instagram appropriate, like how much volume is too much volume. And then whatever he retorts with, I'm just going to exceed that by about 5 times. I'm going to be in Hawaii.
Wow.
And
you go
that's
to Hawaii?
Just going to be. Yeah, but we're actually going to wait. We have to wait. Well, we don't have to. We are going to wait until after the football season. We've just got, there's a lot going on in terms of other weddings right after our own, which makes a long trek like that a little more difficult to pull off. So here's what you have to look forward to in February. I think the NBA All-Star game is then. I'm pretty sure the NFL Combine is then. Franchise tag window, the Super Bowl, and then like maybe 70 pictures of me without a shirt on Instagram.